Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC, with the Restaurant Guys.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to the Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left at Captain Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. Through WCTCAM or guysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Hello, Mark.
Hey, Francis.
How are you today?
I'm great, man. How you doing?
I'm well, but I'm sort of in a mood to bitch a little bit. Do you mind?
Oh, golly. Not again.
No. I'm in a mood to bitch, and I'm also in a mood to celebrate, so we'll do both. We'll start with the bitching. How's
okay,
that?
Okay, I always prefer to start with the celebrating.
Okay, here's something that's just been
that
getting under my...
I can bitch about how you celebrate.
Here's just something that's been getting under my skin a little bit for the last month or two. I read in the Home News Tribune, which is our local New Jersey paper, they have an article about how classic cocktails are coming back. Of course, it's a set piece from the Associated Press. Classic cocktails happened to have come back in New Brunswick 2 years ago.
Well, truly they came back. Well, we opened the cocktail bar 3.5, 4 years ago, and truly they came back doing classic cocktails in 1993 in Stage Left.
We had a Dale DeGroff dinner in 1994, the first ever cocktail dinner in New Jersey, with the guy who would go on to become the most influential cocktailian in the world. And I read in the Home News how a sip of the past, classic cocktails are starting to come back. Isn't that super? by the Associated Press, though it's in our home paper. I will tell you also that on the front of the food section of the New York Times in the last 6 weeks, one day it was about how wood grilling really enhances the flavor of your food.
Francis and I got our wood-burning grill in 92.
92. We've been grilling all of our steaks and burgers since 92. The other was about absinthe and how absinthe is really good. There's a picture of an absinthe drip. My absinthe drip. And if I know, and I think I have a sneaking suspicion where Eric Asimov got it for the Times, got the picture of absinthe drip, because it's really exactly our absinthe drip.
It is the absinthe drip we use in the restaurant.
I know where they get it from in France, and I shared with a very important someone in the cocktail business where to get such an absinthe drip. I think that came from us.
Okay.
I literally think that. It's okay again. But again, we've been pouring. Before absinthe was legal, we were serving our delicious pastis through an absinthe drip. And then the little cherry on top, the front page of the New York Times, had somebody pulling out a mason jar from a hot water bath. And it was an article on canning, which we have started. This is our fifth year of canning.
Yeah, absolutely.
I seriously believe that if we had invented the light bulb... And 2 years later, someone in New York invented the light bulb. The headline would read, "Light bulb invented in New York." I really do believe that. It's just pissing me off a little bit.
Yeah, you got to get over it. You know, one of the things that we face here in New Jersey is that we're in the shadow of New York City. And we're in the shadow of a lot of the tall buildings that are there. But at the same time, we get a lot of benefit from it. You know, you and I have often gotten a lot of great inspiration because we're close to New York City.
It's absolutely true.
It is a place that's given to us... So many of our great ideas.
A light bulb invented in New York City is what it would read. You could do anything. You could invent the cure for cancer here.
Oh, you really are just bitching, aren't you?
And if they invent the cure for cancer, later they invented it, they did the same thing in New York. They'd be like, cure for cancer, invented in New York City. Jersey given no credit at all. But I do want to also reach out a thanks and point out and sort of break our hands patting ourselves in the back. We were recognized by Food & Wine magazine, their cocktail guide, named the 100 Best Bars in America. Catherine Lombardi Bar was the only bar from New Jersey mentioned in the 100 Best Bars in America.
That was really nice.
That was great. And the Food Network magazine picked the best burgers in America by state, and the best burger – so every state they picked the best burger – and, of course, Stage Left's burger was chosen best burger in New Jersey.
I'm going to just join Francis in griping just for a second. You know, one of the things that really ticked me off way back when?
What's that?
Back in 2000, Stage Left won City Search didn't have a New Jersey section.
So they
did best burger in New York City. They did best burger in New York City. And when they did best burger in New York City, Stage Left won for best burger for City Search in New York City. And it was great. You know, I got the plaque on the wall, best burger in New York City. How nice. What a lovely little award. 2001 comes around. We're like, hey, we're not nominated. What's going on? They're like, yeah, you're too far from City. You're not allowed.
What they had said was they had editors have gotten such flack for allowing us to be included in consideration, sort of considering New York City the greater New York area, that the New York City restaurants got us disqualified. Hey, guys, that's not a fair fight. If you're afraid of me, come out to the Garden State, home of Tony Soprano.
Anyway, obviously, like we, Francis and I, are doing this a little bit tongue-in-cheek because, you know, New York is obviously one of the great restaurant cities of the world. New Jersey has a long way to go on catching up, but there are some really cool things that are happening in New Jersey and in other places in the country. You don't have to just go to San Francisco, Chicago, and New York City for great restaurant experiences, especially now the world map has changed a little bit, and there are some other really cool places that there's some fine dining. And frankly, and in the case of the restaurant we're going to talk about on the show, there are places that have been doing some really cool things for 50 or 60 years that have kind of just hit, I don't want to say just hit the radar because, you know, if you're in the know, you've known about some of these places for a long time, but
are really in the spotlight now.
They're really in the spotlight now, and people are starting to take notice that while those are the centers of what's going on, there are some other cool satellites in other places in the country.
When we come back, we're going to talk with Mark Canlis about his family's restaurant they've had for 60 years in Seattle. Final note on this segment is that you should all know the light bulb was invented by Thomas Edison. Laboratories in West Orange, New Jersey. Okay, light bulb, Thomas Edison, West Orange, New Jersey. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys on WCTC-AM and RestaurantGuysRadio.com. Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis, and our guest today is Mark Canlis. Mark runs with his family Canlis Restaurant in Seattle. It's one of the Northwest, if not the best restaurant in the Northwest, and one of the best restaurants in the country, and it's been around for over 55 years.
Mark Canlis, welcome to the show.
Thanks, gentlemen. Thanks for having me on.
You know, it's funny. We started our restaurant 17 years ago, and we thought, you know, my God, if we make it to 5 years, first of all, it'll kill us, and secondly, we never thought we'd make it to 5 years. You know, every once in a while, we look around, we look over our shoulders, and we realize that your restaurant's been open about four times as long and three generations family. Mark has forbidden his family to get
exactly. It's, you should be angry with your father, Mark. Whatever he's done to you, he did it wrong.
So,
oh, my goodness. It's so, too late, though. That's
so,
the problem.
Well, so tell us the story of Canlis, because there are a couple of stories here, and it really is, it's recognized by a lot of major publications, most recently Savoir Magazine, as being one of the best restaurants in the country. And, you know, it ain't no spring chicken, yet it's still current. Two stories here. There's a story of a restaurant and a restaurant having such a long tenure and not becoming a relic or a museum of its former self. And there's a story of family. So tell us the story of the restaurant.
The story of the restaurant starts in 1950, or even, I suppose, before that. It was my grandfather that started it. And, oh, wow, he had grown up in the food business. His father actually cooked for Teddy Roosevelt, and they met at the Hotel Mina over on the Mediterranean when Roosevelt was heading down to his African safari, and so that my great-grandfather would have been one of the stewards on his big safari while they were hunting animals and filling them in the filling museum up with taxidermy.
You know, Mark?
Mark? That's how they ended up in the country, was cooking their way through that, and then at some point, you know, made it from the East Coast over to the West Coast where my grandfather grew up in a cafe. So I guess you could say it's actually four generations old if you start the story there.
Well,
and then he ran away from it for a while, but found himself in Hawaii, you know, during the war, and shortly thereafter opened up a restaurant, kind of a burger joint, called The Broiler, which a lot of folks on the island still talk about and are familiar with. And then in 1950, he came to Seattle and opened up the first Canlis restaurant, and that's where our story begins, I guess.
So 1950, you know, that's half a century ago. What was that restaurant like? I mean, did he have the resources to sufficiently capitalize it, and was he that in your current beautiful location?
It's funny. You talk about the resources. He built the restaurant with $50,000 and then ran out of money and ended up living upstairs in the penthouse, a room we call the penthouse, which is now a private dining room, and working downstairs, very sort of old-world European style. And, you know, fine dining back then was different. Evolved so much in 5 years, let alone the 50 or really now 60 that the restaurant's been operating. And back then it was a whole different ballgame. Chefs weren't celebrities. Kitchens weren't open to the dining room. A lot of restaurants didn't even prepare food a la carte. You know, you were preparing large pieces of meat in an oven and maybe slicing it to order. But a lot had changed. Service was entirely different. Tip pools didn't exist. Team-styled service didn't exist. It was all the French formal captain. And frequently you had a, you know, even someone who of European inevitably a European accent looking down their nose at you, sort of in a condescending way, if you ordered the wrong thing or chose the wrong wine or, you know, in some way managed to offend. It was a different ballgame back then, for certain. And I think my grandfather really set out to change some of that.
So how does a restaurant that develops certain mores and certain habits over a 5, 10, 15-year period go about reinventing itself without reinventing itself, that where it stays on keel but changes with the time? And over 60 years, like you just said, that things have changed dramatically.
A restaurant's a living thing, like all of us, and made up of people. And I think a restaurant does it the exact same way that a human does it, the same way that you do it in your marriage. If you think about it, we're all becoming newer versions of ourselves about on an hourly basis. Even biologically, I guess, we're producing skin all the time. So I think a restaurant does the same thing. I think you have to know who you are and what makes up your core and what you value and stay true to those things. And at the same time, always be willing to grow, to learn, to stretch, to work out, to try new things. And if they don't work, to back off of them and try to return to center and ever be evolving and ever be creating yourself. My mom is quite fond of saying that the creator is always creating us. And so in that same sense, we think of the restaurant as always being recreated every night, every week, every month, certainly every year. People always ask my brother and I, you know, how come you guys don't open another restaurant? And my first answer is, I open a restaurant, a new one, every single year, and it's right here in this building. I think it takes that much work to keep it current, to keep it so that it feels alive and fresh and special.
Well, and there's an expression we use all the time. It's if you're not getting better, you're getting worse.
Exactly. You really only have two directions. Have you ever stood on a log in a lake, you know, and the thing starts to roll, and it's either going to start to roll forward or it's going to start to roll backwards? Our goal is to keep it rolling forwards a little bit, and there's certainly a momentum to it. At some point, I think your age can even help you. Everyone says, gosh, how does a fine dining restaurant stay one of the best in the country? And especially when you're that old, as if being that old was, you know, something really terrible. I don't know. You know, at some point, my dad, I'll never be as good as he is on the floor because he has, you know, 30-plus years of experience. And no one ever said, how is your dad? How is he such a good restaurateur at that age? You know, it's like, well, at that age, he's had the amount of time to understand how to do it and to really do it in a beautiful way.
He's seen it evolve over time.
Exactly.
And I have to point out to you, Mark, that log rolling is not yet part of my repertoire.
You know, it should be. I'm sitting here in the cachet overlooking the lake and the mountains, and of course it's 80 degrees today in Seattle like it always is here. And about all these kids playing down in the park, I can see them. So log rolling was just an analogy that popped in my head.
Well, we have to take a quick break, so you watch the log rolling. I'm going to go get a cup of coffee, and we'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys on WCTC AM and RestaurantGuysRadio.com. You know, if you're looking for a perfect restaurant or a home-cooked meal in the Garden State, look no further than Dining Out Magazine, New Jersey. Dining Out's the premier dining guide for northern and central Jersey. It provides the right information to help you make your dining decisions. Whether you're looking for a romantic dinner, a power lunch, entertaining a large group, finding the perfect caterer, or just a night out on the town, Dining Out provides a sample menu, beautiful pictures and reviews, and over 100 of the best restaurants in the state are included. Of course, Catherine Lombardi and Stage Left among them. Dining Out Magazine and DiningOut.com are the go-to dining resource for the Garden State. Aside from comprehensive restaurant listings section, you'll also find in every issue recipes from your favorite chefs, profiles, interviews, and features on dining trends, both in the state and around the country. The latest edition explores the hidden treasures of rural Italy, the finest Italian foods made only by hand, a do-it-yourself journal of wine, beer, and cheese, and unique cocktails from seasoned bartenders throughout the Garden State. Not to mention a list of upcoming events, classes, and charity events handpicked by Dining Out's senior editors. You can pick up your copy today at Barnes & Noble, Borders, Whole Foods, or visit them at www.diningout.com to view all the restaurants listed and join their subscription list. Dining Out is the ultimate must-have resource to feed the inner foodie in you. That's at diningout.com. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis. We're talking with Mark Canlis about his family's restaurant, Canlis in Seattle. The restaurant's been around for over 55 years, ranked among the best in the country. And we were talking, Mark, about the history of the restaurant. I've known many family-run restaurants who not only don't survive a generation, but cause families to break apart Yours sure. has stayed together and in the restaurant business and running the same restaurant for better than half a century. What's the family story there? How does that work? Has it ever really threatened to cause a rift? Has it restaurant play in your life?
I think that all the time it threatens the family. And it's a decision. And I wish I had a secret for you. If I did, I'd maybe try to write a book or something. I don't have any golden secrets to that. I can tell you that the reason my father got involved is much different than the reason that my brother and I got involved, and that the way that his dad ran his family is much different than the way that my dad ran ours.
Can you give us a little story of those different
ways? Back then, Peter Canlis was a consummate restaurateur. The restaurant, it was almost like he was married to it. And so I think that my father saw that and realized it was a great way to create a restaurant and a great way to maybe create some fame, but it wasn't much of a way to maybe run a family and be a parent. And so when we were growing up, it was just the opposite. The family came first, and the restaurant was always second, always. And for that reason, we sort of gravitated towards the restaurant. It became a place where it wasn't about the restaurateur as much as it was the guests, and it was a place where we could just enjoy it as a family, break bread together, and be a part of our home, like an extension of our living room almost. So we were drawn to the business because, in a large part, my parents were able, I think, to invest in us as kids while they were running a restaurant. And of course, it's a thing to do.
So what you're saying
is, nighttime only. So
if I don't want my children to get into the restaurant, what I need to do is make sure it comes between us.
Now that's certainly one method, sure.
Now, you left. You didn't go right into the restaurant business. You went and had a whole career in the Air Force.
Right. I spent some time. We went away for college and then spent some time as an officer in the military. And then at some point, worked my way out of that. Ended up in New York City working for Danny Meyer, which was just an amazing experience. And then found my way out here about 10 years later in 2003. I guess came back professionally full-time working for the restaurant. We grew up here as kids, washing dishes like everybody else. But really didn't start professionally until 2003.
Did you have?
I brought my brother on in 2005.
Did you have in the back of your mind? Did you think you'd always go back into the family business? Was it always
Never,
sort of there? Really?
Actually, really? None of us thought we would. At some point, you get to that age where you realize that to work with your parents is something that's special, and a lot of people don't have that option for whatever reason. And a lot of people wouldn't take it if they did have the option. And we were in a position where I thought that would be a really unique thing to learn a craft and a trade from your parents, from people who, I regard as kind of masters at what they do, at people and at serving others and at hospitality. So that was an unusual thing, and if I was going to work as hard as I was working in New York City, I might as well do it for my dad in Seattle. So I got drawn back that way and really haven't looked back. I've absolutely fallen in love with it. And in a large part, to answer your question about family, I think that you all have to have the same values. At Canlis, trustworthy, generous, and other-centered are what we base the company around. And if you don't fall into those three categories, you're probably doing something wrong. That's at home, with your family, with your wife, or on the floor in front of the guests. Those are the things that the restaurant operates on. So I think if you can keep those things core and central and stay rooted in them, the difficulties of running a restaurant will kind of pan themselves out in time.
That's trustworthy, generous, and other-centered.
Exactly.
That's a pretty good mantra.
Yeah, consider that.
I tell my, if you remember nothing else, this Saturday we'll have about 300 guests on the floor. And it's a lot, including the private dining rooms and everything. And inevitably it's going to get crazy. And I'll tell them, every one of them, if nothing else, I want you to come across as being trustworthy in front of the guests. And I want them to feel like you're generous and you're being other-centered, not on yourself, but on someone else. And if we can do that, then the restaurant will work. It's a million details, of course, and brilliant food, and it's a great view and a winning wine list. But at the end of the day, I don't think the guest cares about those things so much as the way that you've made them feel. And that's what we're working towards. And I think trustworthy, generous, other-centered is a good step in that direction.
Yeah, Mark, please consider that mantra stolen. Okay?
Yeah. Staff meal tonight. We will be introducing the new mantra.
The kid, my wine director called it TGO. He's like, that's not TGO.
That's funny. Also, we will steal the abbreviation. Thank you for that. Thanks for
the whole
package.
Yeah, absolutely. You can take them both.
Thanks.
There goes my intellectual property.
Mark, you've done something really extraordinary with your restaurant, I think, that, something that I just can't believe as an achievement. You've been open nearly 60 years. You're on your fifth executive chef. We've been open 17 years. We're on our 10th executive chef. You got to divulge the secret there of maintaining that kind of continuity.
Again, I wouldn't dare pretend to have to know what that secret is. I think that part of the magic of this restaurant here is that we've had employees stay here for a long time. And it almost sounds cliche now to call a restaurant family, but the fact of the matter is that that's exactly what it is. And you feel that when you walk into a place. You know it right away when you meet a server or a hostess. And so we've had the great fortune of having just a few chefs. And I remember, I'm only 34, I remember all five of them. And Joe Ching, the original chef, taught me how to salmon fish. And Rocky Taguchi taught me souffles out of an oven with my fingers, which just doesn't even seem healthy anymore. But I was a dishwasher when he was a chef. And it's really been amazing. Greg Atkinson also. And then Aaron Wright, of course, who's now at the Calistogan Inn. And recently Jason Franey's taken over. And I tell you what, his food is stunning. To us, I think one of the goals of a chef is to make a restaurant more like that restaurant. And Jason said it best, you know, when he said, my goal is to make Canlis feel more like Canlis, better food and better hospitality. And I think when you have people pulling in that direction and wanting what's best for the good of the organization as a whole, and then you as owners want what's best for the person, then that's sort of a synergistic thing, and you can get people to work with you for a long time, hopefully. It doesn't always work out. We've certainly been fortunate in that regard.
That's really interesting to hear. You know, I know Jason just started with you back in December, but one of the things that Francis and I fight whenever we go through a chef change is keeping the ship going in the right direction. You know, you hearkened it to, you know, being in a marriage, and, you know, Francis and I have had 10 wives. So it's really hard to keep the ship moving in the exact same direction as
sure.
Chefs and other people in your organization kind of have other ideas. And I think it's okay.
You know, to be honest, and chefs, of course, get this bad rap of having, you know, enormous egos and whatnot. And that could be part of it. I think it's key to find, regardless of who you're hiring, a chef or anyone, to find someone in your organization who understands that the world doesn't revolve around them is an important thing. That's that other centered piece that we talked about. And I require that of anyone, including the executive chef. And that's one of the magic pieces to having Jason here, is that he gets that. And not only is he exceptionally talented with just fantastic technique and skill, but and a great palate, but I think he gets people and he gets leadership. And that's what a chef is doing back there. And it's the way that they lead, the way that they inspire through that they're making and the connections they're making with guests that really make a difference. So, gosh, I wish I had a magic pill for you. But we're still learning that ourselves, you know, to be perfectly honest. And Brian and I have wrestled through that, and we're figuring out one day at a time, you know, one step at a time, and trying to understand how it is that you guide a restaurant with this much history and heritage momentum in a new direction, but I guess on a tour course, in the same direction, but maybe in a more efficient way or in a more beautiful way or something like that. So.
You know, you said
you all have obviously earned quite a reputation, even with 10 chefs, and I think that is an accomplishment in and of itself.
Well, thank you very much. Well, I mean, one of the things that you talked about just now was, you know, can't revolve around the chef. It can't really revolve around one person, not the owner, not the chef, not anybody.
Exactly, not even the owner. It's not their place. It should revolve around the guest. And a restaurant that has that backwards, I don't think will survive. It certainly won't survive now. And if it has up to this point, I would say that it's gotten lucky or rested on something else. But anymore, you know, the heart of hospitality, I think the Latin, and don't quote me on this, but I think hospitalitas essentially is where they're from. It meant to take in, as in to take in a stranger, and that was a big deal back then. And it was the bringing in of someone unknown and the willingness to give a little bit of yourself to them. And that's where this business stemmed out of, and that's what we're trying to emulate. And so it's not about a chef, or it's not about an owner, it's not about a dish, it's not about even, you know, the ambiance or any of the things, but it really is about how well can you celebrate that person that's chosen to come doors. We have this big Japanese kura door in our entryway, and a kura door was the innermost of three treasure doors in Japan, and behind it all the villagers would leave their treasures. And my mom put it there because she just felt like, wow, these people, these guests for 60 years, they've come in here and they've given us, our restaurant, you know, their time and their memories and their families and their daughter's first 16th birthday or their son's graduation or whatever it is. They're giving you something to treasure, and it's your job as a restaurant to safeguard that, to protect it, to hold it dear, and then to honor it and celebrate it and turn it into a fun and special night. You guys know what that's about. simple bottle of wine or the right accent can just hit it out of the park.
It's the best part of what I do.
You know, we say in the restaurant all the time, when we talk to our staff, we say, you know what, one of our restaurants is pretty much on the high end and the other one's a little more casual. But about both of the restaurants, especially the high-end restaurant, we say, you know what, some people that are coming in here are people who dine out at fancy restaurants and can dine anywhere in the world anytime they want. And for them,
right.
We really need to be special because they're choosing us when they could go anywhere. And then there are other people who, you know, save up their pennies and go out to a restaurant like this.
Who read about us for 10 years decided to come in.
Or who go out to a restaurant like this once a year. And, you know, it's their birthday, it's their anniversary, it's their whatever it is. And you know what? Almost more of a responsibility to them that you can't screw it up. You know, you've got
to. And the beautiful thing is that for those 3 hours, they're equals, sitting there in community. And it's, yeah, you have an enormous responsibility to honor that. I had a soldier come back recently, and he said, I'm taking my wife out because she was faithful to me. And I saved up the entire time in Iraq and bought her a new dress, bought me a new suit. And it's like an incredible, you're thinking, wow, you know, that's a big deal. That's not just 3 hours and a couple of courses. That's, he's celebrating.
Right. And celebrating coming home.
Yeah.
Well, listen, if you want to go to a really special place and you're out on the West Coast, I know the next time that Mark and I are out on the West Coast, we're going to try and get up there. The restaurant is Canlis. You can read more about it on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. Mark, thanks for coming on the show to talk about your family's restaurant with us.
You bet. Thanks, gentlemen.
We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys on WCTC-AM and restaurantguysradio.com. I would like to announce the most exciting new project Mark and I have launched in years. We've teamed up with some old friends, Mike and Jennifer Schnurr, and worked with our chefs and purveyors of artisanal food products to create RestaurantGuysChocolate.com. Yeah, baby, we've created a line of extraordinary and delicious chocolates in a palette of thoughtful and complex flavors. They're sexy, they come in a great, beautiful red box, they're handmade, and they make a perfect gift or a perfect personal indulgence. We ship overnight, or you can pick them up at the restaurants. The website is restaurantguyschocolate.com, or find the link at restaurantguysradio.com. We put our heart and soul into every box, and each one's made by hand. There's a little bit of my soul in every piece of candy, that's right, and a little bit of Mark's too. So check out restaurantguyschocolate.com. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to Mark and Francis, the restaurant guy. Finished talking with Mark Canlis. I was amazed about that restaurant. I didn't really know about it, and then all of a sudden I saw it in a bunch of different publications, and I read a lot about it. And I didn't know that Mark Canlis had worked for Danny Meyer. We have a lot of mutual friends with folks that worked with him. Small, small world.
It is a small world, yeah. We were talking a little bit beforehand and realized that we know a lot of the same people, but that's the case in this business. This business is much smaller than people think it is. They think, you know, there's thousands and thousands of chefs world, but we're in touch. You know, lots of people have worked in lots of different places, especially if you're close to New York City here. A lot of people have spent some time in New York City.
Yeah, the 6 degrees of separation thing. There is a lot of, like, if you're going to a new place, you sort of ask your friends, hey, do you know anybody in Zurich? Mm-hmm. Anybody in Zurich? Anybody got anything? And you know what? Facebook has made that a whole lot easier. I think the Facebook phenomenon within the restaurant industry is incredible because it's easier to find people.
Well, it's that way with everything. That's the whole idea of Facebook. But being networked in with your restaurant friends, I think even more so than your high school friends or your college friends or your old fraternity buddies, it's easy to lose track of your restaurant friends because they move across the country and go to different restaurants or to another country or do a stagiaire here, and they're gone for 8 months. And in the restaurant business especially, you're close with people. It's almost like living in a dormitory floor. You get very close to the people you live with and you work with every day in a restaurant situation. And then they go to another restaurant and they're kind of gone and they're starting those new relationships with the next person. So I agree with you. Facebook's an interesting way to kind of reconnect with some of those people who kind of just disappeared off the radar.
And we're embracing technology, although we're taking it at one step at a time. A lot of people signed up to follow us on Twitter. We haven't really started tweeting yet. I don't know that I can handle that just yet. But Facebook has really proven to be a great. We're putting up a Restaurant Guys Facebook page. But on my personal page, I was communicating with a friend whose email address I had misplaced when I went over to Ireland recently, who's a bartender at the Merchant Hotel in Belfast. And I have to say, it's a great cocktail bar in a city that, before the Merchant opened up, was not really known for great. And this guy named Hayden Lambert, who we correspond once in a while. But the long and short of it is, when I got over there, I couldn't access my email, but I just got onto Facebook at a local kiosk, and we wound up hooking up and going out for drinks, and it was quite the thing.
The world is changing, my friend.
Yeah.
Anyway, yet again.
Well, enough with tales of Ireland. I hope that you've enjoyed this last hour with the restaurant guys. I hope you go visit Mark Canlis out in Canlis Restaurant if you're ever out on the West Coast. I am Fran.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys on WCTC AM and restaurantguysradio.com.